Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3, the game on this Friday. We're live at the Omni Nashville Hotel at Kitchen Notes, as we are each week, usually on Thursdays, but good to be here. And on Fridays at 10, we are joined by number 81, wide receiver for the Tennessee Titans, Christopher Dwayne Sanders, who joins us now. Chris, good morning. How are you?
Man, how are you doing, man? Appreciate the introduction, man. It just feels good that football's here, camps are going on, and just kind of see what the Tennessee Titans are going to do. Very, very, very excited.
I know, 2 days in, and everybody's like, what do you think? How they look? What do you think about them? Well, they haven't put the pads on yet, so
right.
Everybody looks great. You know, Levis is looking really good. They're all happy with him. But, you know, it's important. Like, what did you get? And I know the rules were different back then, but, like, the first few days of training camp, it's a lot of install. It's a lot of just kind of getting into the swing of things, right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, you install, and coaches want to see how you're going to respond. But it was a little different when I got drafted in 1995. That's a long time. But, you know, the practices were so intense. And I was in Houston, and we actually had 2-a-days, and we wore pads, you know, twice a day. So when you practice against Chris Dishman, Marcus Robinson, Blaine Bishop, you know, Michael Barrow, all those guys that are intense, practices were absolutely crazy. And we knew off the cuff that this was going to be something special.
So there's been a lot of talk about DeAndre Hopkins and whether the Titans should extend him or not. Rand Carthon was asked about that and, you know, was kind of coy about it, but also at the same time kind of tipped his hand of like, yeah, we'd like to have him back. He's been a really good fit. DeAndre talked yesterday. He's loving Nashville. He's loving the Titans. Yes. It seems like a really good fit. So, you know, I heard Jared use the analogy of, well, you know, he likes her. She likes him. Why aren't they together? I kind of feel like something's going to get done, but would you like the idea of DeAndre Hopkins coming back for at least another year after this one?
I think he should, and the reason why I think he should, you know, change is because he's been playing at a high level. It's not like his play has gone down. I mean, look at last year, he had over 1,000 yards and I think 6 or 7 or 8 touchdowns, so he's still playing in a high level. And here's what you got to look at also is you got a quarterback that's in his second year. He's still basically a rookie. So when you have a rookie quarterback, basically, you want to have a veteran wide receiver, and who else to have than D-Hop. So you have him that's going to tell him the ins and outs, tell him what he's looking for, how to prepare, how to look at film. So you want to keep him around. And then also, he's a great locker room guy, a guy that cares about his players, a guy who stands up and says how he feels. So those are the kind of cats that you definitely want to build around.
Chris, when you were a rookie, were there moments during training camp where you felt so alone, like it's just you versus the world?
Yes. I remember we were running a play, and I think it was my second play of the game, and I ran a slant, and Marcus Robinson hit me in the mouth. That's when I felt all alone. I'm like, what am I doing here? I mean, nobody picked me up. Nobody said, great job. I just got up, and I felt all alone. But at the end of the day, I had to understand that this is a job. I mean, everybody's fighting for a job. And, you know, I was going against a lot of great wide receivers and a lot of veterans that established themselves. So I did feel alone. It was hard to kind of ask a veteran, you know, guy, because I just felt all alone. So that was a great question that you asked.
Well, you know, it's also about, did anybody take you under their wing? I know when I was in college, some guys want to do the hazing, and we all stopped because, you know what, we're on the same team. And because you're a senior doesn't give you the right to be a complete ass to a freshman or whatever. And so did anybody take you – did you have a confidant? Did you have a veteran you could go to and talk to during camp?
I did. First of all, it was Webster Slaughter before he got cut. I mean, Webster Slaughter was one of the guys who taught me how to run routes, really taught me how to get off the line of scrimmage. He taught me a lot of things. But here's a guy that really, you know, taught me the ins and outs. It was Michael Barrow. He was a defensive linebacker. I don't know if y'all remember him, but he would always come and talk to me after practice. He would always talk to me about being a professional. He would always talk to me about just doing the right thing. So he was a guy that saw a lot of potential in me, he saw that I could make some plays. But beyond the football, he sat down and he talked to me about life, and it was Michael Barrow.
Wow, that's amazing. You talk about that receiver room in 98 and 99, how you guys were all one, you and Derek and Kevin Dice and everybody. Was that important? I mean, did you take a rookie under your wing? Did you even a guy, an undrafted free agent who you probably knew wouldn't make the team, did you give him advice? Did you do that mentor to him?
1,000%, it was a guy named Justin McCarron's. When Justin McCarron's came in, I mean, he was consistently watching us, but he was very, very quiet. And here's the cool part about the whole situation is Justin McCarron's got a hold of me. After I retired, he got a hold of me about 11 years later, and he sent me a text, and he told me, he said, Chris, I want to thank you for mentoring me. I want to thank you for showing me the ins and outs. I want to thank you for, you know, showing me what it looks like to be a professional. Even though I talked to him a little and I told him a couple of things, but he was watching me. He was watching me how I responded, watching me how I took coaching, watching me how I did these things. And 11 years later, he sent me a text telling me, thank you. And that's what it's all about. Listen, I understand that we all have to fight for a job in the meeting room. We all have to fight for a position. But at the end of the day, it's about making guys better. Look at 1999. We had a lot of receivers in there when we had myself. We had Derek Mason. We had Yancey Thigman. We had Isaac Byrd. We had a lot of guys that can play. But here's the one thing that we loved about each other. We made each other better, and we cared about each other. That's what made that receiver room special.
So we got the – Chris Sanders is with us. We got the first injury. Awuzie, the corner that signed, he left practice early. He's going to miss a few weeks because of a calf injury. Yeah. It's a part of it, but you hate seeing a guy hurt in the first day of training camp.
It is, because that was the knock on Awuzie before, is the injury situation. And when you have a situation on the first day of practice or the second day of practice, he gets hurt, it raises red flags and it raises a concern, because, Jared was talking about this, when they signed him. He was afraid of the injury, afraid of, a guy consistently getting hurt, because that was just kind of his background a little bit. But, yes, it raises red flags, and it's just a tough situation, because here's a guy that Denard Wilson, the defensive coordinator, is basically dependent on, to come in here and start as a corner and be a shutdown corner. So, yes, it's disappointing, but just like you said, Chase, it's a part of the game.
A lot of people have talked about Chig Okonkwo and him needing to take a big step forward in his third year as the tight end for this team. And I know he's had a couple of good days where he's stood out. Again, no pads, all of that. Let's temper expectations. But Josh Wiley has gotten some praise as well. Do you feel like that there's a competition right now for the starting tight end on this football team?
I think so, too. I mean, if you look at last year, we had the same conversation, to where I went to a practice and Chig is looking phenomenal. I mean, he looks like Kelce. He looks like all those big-time tight ends. But then he gets to the game and it's inconsistent. So what I'm looking for Chig is to be consistent in practice, which he was, but consistent in the game. But then you got Josh Wiley, who's a big 6'8", 6'7", guy that you can throw the ball up and make some big-time plays. And if Josh Wiley keeps making those plays, I think you might see him in that position even more, as opposed to just sitting on the sideline. So, yes, I'm not saying right now that it's a competition of who's starting, but at the end of the day, if Josh Wiley keeps making plays like he's consistently doing, you might see Josh Wiley more than you see Chig.
Do you think right now, and I think 100%, that the coaching staff knows who their 11 starters are on offense and defense? I mean, they got to know, right?
Kind of. The receiver position, you kind of know, but we still got, a question mark with the right tackle. I mean, I know you have Skoronski, I know you have Latham, and I know you have Cushenberry. Those are the guys that you know that are going to start. But then you have different positions that you really don't know. I mean, you got the right tackle. We don't know. We don't know what Petit Ferrer is going to do. We don't know Raiders. We just don't know. But you look at the quarterback position, you know who's going to start at quarterback. Then you got the running back position, to where you kind of know who's going to start. We say Pollard. But then you got Spears that's looking well also. But then you got the receiver position, to where you got Cavarilli, is going to start. You got Tyler Boyd is going to start. You got, Hopkins is going to start. But then you look in the back with the second tier of guys. You got Burks. You got Kyle Phillips. You got, some other receivers that had a potential to play. You have some positions that are set, but then you have some other positions that are not set. So it's still kind of in the air.
Last year, Will Levis, Chase and I were talking about this, during training camp, was probably taking second and sometimes third team quarterback reps. So you saw, Chris, firsthand, Steve McNair, 95-96, take second team reps. How much difference did you see with Steve when he took the starting reps in training camp in 97 and knew that team was his? What was the difference?
It was a big difference. I mean, it's like this. When you're a second and third string guy, you really can't take ownership of the offense. I mean, you can say a couple of things. You can say a couple of things to the veteran players, but sometimes they're not going to listen to you because you're not the starter. But now when Steve McNair became the starter, now you're like, okay, I'm zoned in. He's zoned in. I'm not saying he wasn't zoned in, but he's focused on, okay, I got to talk more. I got to speak more. I got to take ownership of this offense, because you can't take ownership of the offense if you're a third stringer. So you feel like, well, okay, well, maybe I'll start if somebody gets hurt. But from day one, when you know that you're a starter, there's a different attitude. There's a different mindset. There's, you know, I got to speak more. Even though Steve McNair was a quiet guy, he still, when he took reign of the offense, he spoke more. He talked to me more. He talked to Mace more. He talked to the offense more. He talked to the coaches more. Why? Because he's taking ownership. And when he took ownership of that offense, then that was when our offense excels, because he took ownership of it.
Who was, when you were in camp as a rookie, first couple of years, who was it on the secondary that ran their mouth so much that you wanted to punch them?
Chris Dishman. Oh, my gosh. When I tell you, Chris Dishman was the craziest, best teammate to ever have, because the first day of practice, he didn't call me Chris Sanders. He called me Ohio State, because he come out here, Ohio State. So every time I went one-on-one, it was against Chris Dishman. I didn't go against anybody else. I went against Blaine Bishop once, but after I beat him on the post, he said, I ain't doing this no more. So Chris Dishman.
Now, there's a current assistant coach for the Titans that I know could talk a little smack back in his day, and that's Steve Jackson.
Oh, God. Let me tell you something. That whole secondary was crazy. They were crazy. Marcus Robinson would talk. When I say crazy, I mean like crazy in the head. They just would talk trash. I'm going to give you a perfect example. We were scrimmaging the Washington Redskins. We're doing 7-on-7. You don't hit in 7-on-7. Those guys were form tackling in 7-on-7, so they had to cancel the practice. That's how crazy those guys were. But that's what made practice so fun. Chris Dishman talking stuff to me. Chris Dishman talking stuff to Haywood Jeffries. It was just made it fun. But at the end of the day, when you have guys like that, that when we go battle somebody like Kansas City or the Jacksonville Jaguars, instead of fighting us, they're going to fight for you. Why? Because we were brothers. That's what made it so special.
Do you know what? Marcus Robertson's now the DB coach for the New Orleans Saints.
I know, and he's a great coach. I mean, he's one of the smartest guys in the secondary. So congratulations to him. But a great player, great safety, and that's what he's one of the reasons why we went to the Super Bowl.
Yes, let me ask you this. The Olympics start tonight. I know you held the record for long jump at Ohio State. You beat Jesse Owens. Why? And if you don't want to answer it, I understand.
Sure.
Why didn't you go for the 96 team, even though you're playing pro football?
It's funny that you said, I'm glad you asked that question. You know, I remember I was talking to my head coach Ubarak from NBA. He asked me this question. He said this. He said, do you ever have any regrets? And I sat there, you know, with a tear in my eye, and it took me back to where in 1992, where I qualified for the Olympic trials. And when I qualified for the Olympic trials, at that time, I was ranked number 3 in the world. And I'm not bragging, I'm just telling you what it is. I was ranked number 3 in the world, not in a country, in the world. So now I get to Olympic trials, and then I have one of my football coaches tell me that, basically saying, if you don't show up for summer workouts and summer, you know, training, then basically you're not going to start. So now I had a dilemma. I'm sitting in my apartment, and I have a dilemma. Do I want to do the Olympics, or do I want to listen to my coach? So here's what I did, and it hurts me to this day, is I went out to the Olympic trials, and all I had to do was jump like I usually jump, and I'll qualify. So what I did is I ran down the runway slow and barely jumped 25 feet and finished 12th. But if I'd have jumped like I was supposedly jump, then I'd have went to the Olympics in 1992 as a sophomore in college. That bothers me to this day.
Do you, and this is a thing I do with myself, Chris, I look back now that football starts every year, I always go back to think, God, I didn't work hard enough. And it drives me crazy. And the worst thing about it, Chris, is I can't do anything about this. And it drives me crazy. And all it does is rip me on the inside. How do we get past forgiving ourselves? I don't know if we can.
You know what? You know what's so funny? And I was just about to say that. You got to forgive yourself. You know, we made bad choices. You made choices. I made bad choices. Everybody's made bad choices. But here's what you got to do, and this is what I had to do, is you got to look in the mirror and say, I forgive that guy in the mirror. And that's what you got to do, because I say the same thing. Let me tell you, in college, I worked hard, but I just worked hard just to get by. And instead of jumping 26, instead of jumping 26.9, I could have jumped 28 feet, 29 feet. That's how crazy the ability that I had. And I look back to say, if I'd have worked extra harder, listened to the coach even better, maybe as opposed to being the 45th jump of all times, what if I was in the top 10 of all time? That bothers me. So now, instead of this, instead of me getting bitter, I chose to get better. So now I take what I've learned and I impart it into these kids to say, listen, it's not about taking a playoff. I'm not yelling at you to just get mad because I want you to be the best that God's created you to be. So now, even though I have that regret, I take it and I use it as a positive to impart it to these kids so they don't come up a yard short.
See, this is why I love these interviews, because I walk away every week feeling better about myself.
Should.
Man. So, Chris, thank you. Man. Always thank good y'all. To talk to you. And we can't wait to see you at practice.
I can't wait to be there. I love you guys so much. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
I love you too,
all
Chris.
Right, baby. Thank you.
The man, Chris Sanders, joining us here on the program as he does each week. And it's always inspiring. That is for sure. We will discuss more about Titans training camp coming up next, including something that has come out about a former Titan and what he might do next. We'll do that coming up. Join me and 102.5 The Game tomorrow at Bicentennial Mall from 10 to 2 as Subway's three dip-in slides take over the park. Brave a 37-foot drop through a 22-foot lavish flatbread tunnel, landing straight into a Baja Chipotle peppercorn ranch and honey mustard sauce colored water with saucy consistency. Thrill-seeking footlong fans over the age of 18 must act quickly and visit SubwayDipAndSlide.com now to register for a coveted spot. We'll see you tomorrow from 10 to 2 or 10 to noon at Bicentennial Mall. Looking forward to it.